SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales at sbs.com.au.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, welcome to NITV Radio. Beton Tungandamengaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Monday, the 23rd of September, like every Monday afternoon, we have current affairs stories from a First Nations perspective brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. Today, we also explore a grassroots crime prevention initiative by Tiwi Island Elders. And a First Nations PhD candidate in international relations welcomes the fact that finally lessons from our tens of thousands of years old Indigenous knowledge is finally being recognized as part of mainstream disciplines. All these stories and more coming to you on NITV Radio after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, Australia's two biggest supermarkets sued over allegations of misleading discounts. People of First Nations heritage and diverse communities encouraged to join the Bone Marrow Donor Registry. And 193 countries back a new pact on global cooperation to tackle climate change, wars and inequality. Australia's two biggest supermarket chains are facing legal action over allegations of misleading buyers with fake discounts. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has launched legal action in the federal court against Coles and Woolworths. The regulator claims both retailers increased the prices of products by 15% for brief periods before placing them in respective promotions at prices lower than during the price spike but higher than or the same as the regular price. ACCC Chair Gina Cass-Gottlieb says the regulator alleges Coles and Woolworths breached Australian consumer law.
In times of cost of living pressures, it is critical that all pricing claims and price discount claims are accurate. The ACCC is seeking court orders against each of Woolworths and Coles for breach of the Australian consumer law, penalties, and a community service order to increase the delivery of meals to Australians in need by registered charities in our community.
SBS News has contacted Coles and Woolworths for comment. Advocates say a welcome boost in support payments for low-income Australians is still not enough to make renting affordable in every corner of the country. Payments such as the aged pension, job seeker and the disability pension all increased in line with indexation on Friday, while Commonwealth rent assistance payments were given a 10% top-up. But a report by housing advocacy group Everybody's Home finds people relying on Centrelink
or on the minimum wage would still be in severe rental stress across the capital cities and most regions. Bone marrow transplants are life-saving, but finding a genetic match can be especially difficult for First Nations Australians. Currently, most patients rely on international donors, with 85% of transplants coming from overseas. Lisa Smith from Stealth Sem Donors Australia explains why it's so important to have a diverse pool of donors, especially for Indigenous Australians.
Because the match that we look for is a genetic level match, and so therefore, as a patient, you're much more likely to find your genetic match with a donor that comes from a similar ancestry to yours. And so that's why, and Australia obviously being very multiculturally diverse, we need to have a diverse donor pool. If you come from a First Nations background, really you're unlikely to find a match outside of Australia. So that is why it's particularly important for our donor pool to reflect the diversity of Australia and have a particular emphasis on meeting the needs of First Nation patients.
The lack of diversity in Australia's stem cell registry means that First Nations people have an even harder time finding a suitable match, and advocates are calling for more Indigenous Australians to consider joining the registry, as their contribution could be vital for patients within their communities. The United Nations General Assembly has approved a plan to bring the world's increasingly divided nations together to tackle 21st century challenges. The Pact for the Future, detailed in a 42-page document, outlines 56 actions, including eradicating poverty, mitigating climate change, achieving gender equality, promoting peace and protecting civilians, and reinvigorating the multilateral system to seize the opportunities of today and tomorrow. After 18 months of negotiations led by Germany and Namibia, the pact was adopted by the 193 member nations of the UN at the opening of the two-day summit of the future. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the pact is about how global cooperation should work going forward.
I called for this summit because 21st century challenges require 21st century solutions. Frameworks that are networked and inclusive and that draw on the expertise of all of humanity. I called for this summit because our world is heading off the rails and we need tough decisions to get back on track.
Although the Pact for the Future will not be legally binding, it will be referenced in UN documents to help strengthen the ability of the UN system to deliver on the UN Charter, which is legally binding. United Nations General Assembly President Philemon Yang says what has been achieved with the consensus of the pact should not be undermined.
From conflict and climate change to the digital divide, from inequalities to threats against human rights, together we all face profound challenges. Yet, alongside these challenges, there is hope. There is hope because challenges come along with opportunities. The opportunity for renewal, innovation and global cooperation is within reach.
Richard Gowan from the International Crisis Group says that he thinks the final text of the pact could have been more ambitious, with the inclusion of more new ideas when it comes to wholesale reform of multilateralism. Environmental campaign group 350.org says the real test will be the delivery of the goals outlined in the pact. A United Nations official is warning of imminent catastrophe as the cross-border fighting between Israel and Hezbollah escalates. In a statement, the UN Special Coordinator for Lebanon, Janine Hentz Plaskat, says no military solution will make either side safer. Hezbollah says it is responding to an Israeli airstrike in Beirut on Friday that killed at least 45 people, including one of its top leaders. The Iranian-backed militia and political group says it aimed at military targets in the last 24 hours with the launch of more than 100 rockets across northern Israel. Israeli Army Chief Hazi Halevi says the price that Hezbollah pays is increasing.
Our attacks will increase. We've attacked hundreds of terrorist targets in Lebanon in recent days. Today, this morning, Hezbollah fired once more towards the north. This is firing at civilians. No sovereign country can allow such a threat to its citizens and its sovereignty.
Sri Lankans are rejoicing at the election of Marxist-leaning Anura Kumara Dissanayake as president. Mr. Dissanayake, who lacked the political lineage of his rivals in the presidential election, has pledged to fight corruption and bolster a fragile economic recovery following the South Asian nation's worst financial crisis in decades. He led from start to finish during the counting of votes, beating incumbent President Ranil Wickremesinghe and opposition leader Sajit Premadasa. He took 5.6 million or 42% of the vote, a massive boost to the 3% he managed in the last presidential election in 2019. Mohamed Nafang, a banker in the capital Colombo, says Sri Lanka has been waiting for real change.
After 76 years of bad politicians did something bad to our country, this is the change we need. Actually, that's we hope the new president will do something better.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says he will not make a fourth consecutive run for the U.S. presidency if he loses the November 5th election, saying that will be it. The 78-year-old former president told Shari Atkinson's Full Measure program he's doing his best to win this election.
If you're not successful this time, do you see yourself running again in 4 years?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I think that will be... That will be it. I don't see that at all. I think that hopefully we're going to be successful.
The 6th International Day of Sign Language is being celebrated today by deaf communities globally. The annual event during the National Week of Deaf People commemorates the date when the World Federation of the Deaf was established in 1951. Today, the Federation represents 70 million deaf people from 135 national associations around the world. This year's theme urges people to support better implementation of the human rights of deaf people under the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And to sport in the AFL, Swans midfielder Chad Warner says the team has learned from the experience of losing last year's grand final and will be ready for the grand final on Saturday. 12 months ago, the team fell 4 points short of winning their first premiership since 2003 when they lost to Collingwood. This time, they'll be facing the Brisbane Lions at the MCG in the first non-Victorian grand final in 18 years. Warner says the team has built themselves from the ground up and the players are in the right headspace to execute.
Just soak it all in as much as you can, and I think with our preparation and going into the games, I think you just got to realise the grand final is a different beast, and players from opposition teams are a lot hungrier and a lot more fierce than in the regular season, so I think we can take that learning in this week. Yeah, I think honestly just going back to basics, like we have kind of this year when we're playing not too good footy, we just went back to basics and getting our contest and pressure right. I think if we can just do that though, we'll be right.
And now having a look at the weather around the country, Perth, sunny, 23, Adelaide, partly cloudy, 20 degrees, Melbourne, cloudy and 20, Hobart, windy and partly cloudy and a top of 17 degrees, Canberra, sunny day ahead, 21, Wollongong, similar forecast, 26, Sydney, sunny day, 27, Newcastle, also sunny, 28, Brisbane, similar forecast, 27 degrees, Cairns, also sunny and 31 degrees, and Darwin, mostly sunny day ahead and a top of 34 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
In 2025, SBS will offer 3 cadetship positions, including 1 identified placement for an Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander candidate, culturally and financially supported by NITV National Indigenous Television. All successful cadets participate in the same program of training and work experience. Welcome back, and that was Don't You Worry by Electric Fields. I'm Bertrand Tungandame, and you're listening to NITV Radio coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Coming up next, we explore grassroots initiative by elders in the Tiwi Islands to curb crime rates in their community. And an Indigenous student in international relations welcomes First Nations knowledge gaining traction in mainstream teachings. But first, some current affairs stories brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. History has been made in Queensland with the state's first truth-telling and healing inquiry getting underway. The cornerstone of Queensland's path to treaty, the independent investigation, will examine the historical and ongoing impacts of colonisation. But, as Dan Rennie reports, the inquiry's future is threatened even as it begins.
A celebration to welcome a reckoning with the past. Hundreds gathered to witness history. 5 years of work culminating with the start of Queensland's truth-telling inquiry.
Simple words. Recognition. Acknowledgement. Identity.
Over the next 3 years, these men and women will travel across Queensland to hear the stories of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
None of us here today are responsible for what occurred in days long past. The object of the inquiry is to establish an authoritative public record about the past and its consequences, to enable an honest conversation about the past and what has been done, and what we want for the future.
They will not only examine the past, but laws, practices, and policies that continue to cause harm.
In our history of colonisation to now, what those effects were, what were the opportunities, what were the challenges for our people.
Queensland returned the biggest no vote in last year's failed referendum for a national voice to Parliament. Since then, the opposition Liberal National Party has withdrawn support for the treaty process. If the LNP win the election in October, this inquiry will be scrapped, even after months of evidence.
If we're going to start healing in Queensland, we need to have everybody on board on this. But if we don't, then that's okay too. You know, we need to have this conversation.
The Truth-Telling Inquiry's final report will also inform future treaty negotiations. Formal hearings begin on Wednesday. Dan Rennie, NITV News.
One of the Northern Territory's largest land councils has elected a new leader just months out from an election, citing a loss of confidence in former chair Matthew Palmer. It comes a week after Mr. Palmer joined calls by the federal opposition for a major inquiry into land councils across the nation. NITV's Northern Territory correspondent Emma Kellaway has more.
At a special meeting in Tennant Creek yesterday, the Central Land Council members elected former Deputy Chair Warren Williams to lead the council. He will replace Matthew Palmer, who they say has lost the confidence of the council. It comes just a week after Mr. Palmer joined a press conference in Canberra, led by the Shadow Minister for Indigenous Australians, Jacinta Napinjinpa-Price, and other Arinda elders, renewing long-held calls for an inquiry into land councils across the country.
There are so many issues, so many concerns that require an inquiry to look further into them.
A motion to put forward the inquiry was voted down in the Senate on the same day. The Walpree Senator is currently being sued for defamation by the Central Land Council's CEO, Leslie Turner, over comments claiming the CLC had moved a no-confidence motion against him. In a statement, the newly elected chair, Warren Williams, says this special meeting is testament to our council's good governance processes. I would like to pay a tribute to the integrity of my fellow elected members and express my confidence in and high regard for CLC Chief Executive Leslie Turner. The chair of Aboriginal Investments NT, Barb Shaw, will take on the role of CLC Deputy Chair. Warren Williams is a former assistant principal from UNZAMU with a focus on the well-being of young people. The pair will hold their positions until regular land council elections are held in April next year.
Hundreds of First Nations artefacts have been unearthed at a proposed housing development in Ipswich near Brisbane. The discovery was made by archaeologists and Aboriginal custodians assessing the land before construction starts. As Dan Rennie reports, local Aboriginal groups are demanding development plans be abandoned and the area protected.
Sifting through soil, uncovering historical objects on land earmarked for housing, from spearheads to blades and grinding tools.
We've only first day into it, and we probably pulled out about 1,000 artefacts. And within those 1,000 artefacts, some of them are really well defined and articulated that really showcases the expertise that our old people was using.
On the edge of the sprawling suburb of Redbank Plains is the land of the Yuggera people. Sold to Century Estate for future housing, the discovery has some custodians calling for this area to be protected.
I think the area should be closed down and there should be a large investigation into it and to see what else they can find here.
There's been a long history of disputes over this land. Recent residential developments are nearby White Rock and Deeming Creek, both significant areas for the local mob. This latest development, one, the Yuggera people will continue to fight. But as the site continues to be assessed and samples sent away to be tested and dated, the archaeological team says there is scope for its future protection.
Where we are going to find an assemblage, you know, of artefacts is that they're going to give that back to us and actually demark it as a protection zone.
Developer Century Housing says it engaged the archaeological assessment as part of its commitment to heritage plans for the area. Dan Rennie, NITV News.
The Queensland Murray Rugby League Carnival began on Friday, and this year's event is set to be the biggest in the tournament's history. Reporter Michael Rennie went along to check out all the action on day one.
Well, it's a very hot, humid day here in Meanjin, Brisbane, but it's not stopping the action on the field. Currently, we've got the Oakey Red Belly Blacks taking on Country Brothers. It's been a really good game so far, as you can see the team making a bit of a break down the field there at the moment. But overall, expecting huge crowds this year here at the Murray Carnival, expecting around 50,000 people to come through the gates over the two weekends that this carnival is on. So we've got the men's and women's competition unfolding at the moment. That will wrap up on the weekend. And then next weekend, we've got the kids playing. And there is a lot of kids playing this year. In fact, we've got about 950 kids taking part in this year's Murray Carnival. Organisers say this year is the biggest event that they've ever held. It began back in 2011, and the Arthur Beetson Foundation was a big part of getting this up off the ground in those early days as well. I did catch up with a couple of the fans, the players, enjoying day one of the Murray Carnival.
We have a variety of people all over New South Wales and Queensland, so we have a variety from 18 all the way up to like 39, so we have a great variety, and like I said, when we come together, we become family. So, yeah, great connections are created, yeah.
I love QMC. I love footy. My daughters are both playing today. So, in Mungandai team, actually.
I play for Western Rangers.
Well, what do you love about the game?
It's physical. And you get to tackle people. And, yeah.
There's also big prize money on offer as well this year here at the Murray Carnival. In fact, $30,000 for the winner of the men's competition, while there's $15,000 up for grabs for the winner of the women's comp. And the good news is the weather is tipped to be beautiful like this all weekend.
And that's all for our current affairs stories shared with us by NOLA, an NITV program focusing on current affairs from a First Nations perspective. We must now step aside for a break, but stay with us, because when we come back, we'll explore the Nulawe Duliara Fellowship that allows First Nations arts workers to share their cultural heritage in the Netherlands and globally.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV radio.
Make sure you get the full picture, not just what the social media feed gives you. Find all our news and stories at SBS Language website. Bookmark sbs.com.au/language in your web browser today. Welcome back. Coming Coming up next, the story of local elders in the Tiwi Islands and their efforts to curb crime in their community through grassroots initiatives. But first, Flame Tree by Lorraine Ryan.
Conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Australians living in the remote Northern Territory on the Tiwi Islands have been facing some of the highest crime rates in the nation. Local elders are now looking to remedy that through a grassroots approach that will provide support for families in the community. Helena Krishnamurti reports.
In the remote Northern Territory, 80 kilometres north of Darwin, ongoing cycles of poverty, violence and addiction have been impacting the safety and health of nearly 3,000 people. Local elders on the Tiwi Islands are now hoping to eradicate some of the highest crime rates that their community have been facing with their Child and Family Centre, or CFC. Jennifer Ulungura Clancy is the chairperson of Mantiyupui Trust, a local land-owning group. She says it's important that leaders work with communities to break the cycle of crime.
We get all the leaders and when I come together, how we can break this together, how to break the cycle. How to do it is to come together, help each other, Tiwis and non-Tiwis, coming together. We can do this. If one community can do it, the others can do it as well.
Ms. Clancy says this at a smoking ceremony in Wurrumiyanga as the community mark a new way forward for the Tiwi Islands. Elders in the community want the situation to change, with early interventions to help families before they end up in trouble with the law. Ms. Clancy says their plans are now feasible with the funding provided for the new Child and Family Centre that works as a hub for families.
But Children Family Centre is all about helping the children. The kids are, breaking in or walking around at night and traumatised kids. That helps them.
The family centre took years to achieve after Tiwi elders identified a problem with safety and health in their community. They then received assistance from the government to collaborate on a community-led centre to deliver assessments, life skills and counselling. The elders trialled this concept of their family centre in similar Aboriginal-run centres in Darwin and the remote community of Kalkarindji to see if it could work. Jacinta Alimankini is the director of the Mantiyupui Trust. She says it's crucial to address an issue immediately when families in the community come forward for assistance.
If we see the sign early and it's we can, most important that we tackle them straight away when we see that kind of problem from family. So, those kind of things that we want to work early to help family.
Ms. Alimankini believes it's best for the community to have a family centre where they can go to and feel a sense of belonging. It follows Mantiyupui elders saying the community is in the grips of ongoing cycles of poverty, violence and addiction impacting the safety of its people. Staggering unemployment is a key issue faced by the community, with only 26% of working-age residents having full-time jobs, according to data from the latest census. Brian Clancy from the Tiwi Land Council says the crime rate impacts can be measured in high rates of chronic illness and death.
We've got tens of kids who are dying. We've got 30-year-old, 20-year-old kids who are on dialysis 3 days a week. We have to do things differently. We've done it the Whitefellow way for so long, it hasn't worked. But the positive side is we're actually hearing this now from government.
The Aboriginal-run Child and Family Centre will be built on property from the Tiwi Land Council. This will be backed by $3.4 million in Northern Territory government funding and more than $10 million from the federal government's Aboriginal Benefits Fund. A derelict health clinic will be transformed into a hub where struggling families can be linked with critical programs. Issues such as domestic violence, addiction and unemployment will be addressed in local languages and in culturally appropriate way at the clinic. Phyllis Daniels is a co-founder of Pumalayu Child and Family Centre. She is looking forward to witnessing the clinic operate.
How the people will be running it? It's only by TV run by Mantiyupui. I'm really proud of it. can hardly wait for it to be built.
Donna Robb is from the National Indigenous Australians Agency. She says the local community is going about trying to help people the correct way.
The programs have already begun. So while this beautiful facility is being built, these important services are already happening. And, you know, the no wrong door approach that the Manjil people are taking is something that's really admirable, that no matter which door families come through, they'll be supported and directed to the appropriate services.
The TV facility will become the seventh Aboriginal-run child and family centre in the Northern Territory, where programs will also be implemented in the remote communities of Gapuwiak and Papunya. Helena Krishnamurthy, SBS News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
Welcome back. James Blackwell is a research fellow in Indigenous diplomacy at the Coral Bell School for Asia Pacific and one of the participants at the Australian National University's conference marking the 75th anniversary since the ANU established its International Relations Department. The event brought together global scholars of politics and international studies to explore most pressing issues of our time, with a particular focus on the Gaza conflict, Pacific affairs, climate change, law and politics. In his presentation, James Blackwell highlighted that Indigenous scholarship and lessons from our tens of thousands of years old Indigenous knowledge is finally being recognized as part of mainstream disciplines. Talking to SBS Serbian's Nina Mirkovic, Blackwell also stressed that when ANU's International Relations Department was created back in 1949, Indigenous scholars were not allowed to study at the ANU nor to enter its buildings. His own research looks at how Australia's First Nations practices and knowledges can be better utilised in international relations theory and foreign policy practice.
We're here with James Blackwell, an Indigenous researcher and a research fellow in the Coral Bell School of Asia Pacific Studies. International Relations Department is celebrating its 75th anniversary. It's the oldest department in Australia in IR, and we are at the ANU with James. Welcome to our SBS program.
Thanks for having me.
I was utmost fascinated with your presentation today, James, about the lack of incorporation of Indigenous studies in our general courses, in our politics courses, IA courses, in our education. And your point really struck with me that in 1949, when this discipline was formed, Indigenous students were not even welcome to the ANU.
Yeah, that's the history of Indigenous peoples in Australia, right? It's one of long-term exclusion and, I guess, disenfranchisement from things like voting and civic life, drinking at pubs, coming to things like the ANU. So, you know, it's nice to be here now speaking at this event, but even though we've come a long way, obviously there's still a long way to go in terms of Indigenous justice and rights, even at places like the ANU.
And you are the only staff member with Indigenous background at Hadley Bull, is that correct?
So we have Indigenous colleagues from the Pacific and from Asia, but I'm the only Australian Indigenous person in the school, in the department, yes. That brings benefits and challenges, mostly challenges. I think, you know, we're all a bit overworked. All of us here are overworked, but definitely being the only Indigenous scholar, you know, that creates problems and things. So it would be nice to have more colleagues, but there's a really good community of Indigenous scholars around the ANU more broadly. So there's definitely a big network of people here at the campus and beyond at other universities.
And your point also struck with me that you know, we are learning about diplomacy, negotiation, conflict resolution, trading agreements, but Indigenous peoples of Australia and Torres Strait Islands have been doing this for hundreds of thousands of years. Can you reiterate again that point, please?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so obviously we are here learning about Western diplomacy and kind of the rules-based international order, which is, you know, a couple hundred years old at best, whereas if we're, you know, thinking about Indigenous peoples in Australia, you know, we've been practicing trade, conflict resolution, understanding other people, you know, engaging in diplomacy for 60,000 years, 80,000 years. It's something that's inherent to our culture. It's, you know, we lived in this, I guess our own international system for tens of thousands of years, different nations with their own cultures and languages and stories. And we got along quite successfully in that time. So there's a lot to be learnt from Indigenous peoples, not just in Australia, but in Aotearoa New Zealand and Canada, the US, Scandinavia, South America, all over the world, where people have been practicing diplomacy in non-Western ways and very interesting and different ways from the Western, but also that can feed back into, that we can learn from in a Western sense. So it's really, definitely there's a lot to learn from Indigenous peoples always, but especially, I think, in the areas of diplomacy.
So what is the course that you're teaching, Indigenous diplomacy?
Yeah, so we have a master's course here on Indigenous diplomacy, and we hope we've held regular workshops with elders on diplomacy as well. And it's kind of about exploring the cultural background to diplomacy in the Australian continent. You know, how do Indigenous peoples understand issues of sovereignty, of law, of culture, of trade, of diplomacy? And then also looking at the more modern history of that involvement. So what have Indigenous peoples been involved in the UN, the League of Nations, the World Economic Forum, all kinds of international environments, engaging with colonial governments, with Australian governments. And so that's the kind of courses that we teach here on Indigenous diplomacy. It's kind of this journey from, not journey from, but journey with culture and with politics, looking at the historical, which is also still contemporary. Many peoples across the continent still practice their traditional diplomacy, still engage in very traditional and cultural ways, but also looking at, okay, what does that look like in the more modern setting that I guess most people would probably be familiar with.
Is there much collaboration with international partners, like colleagues from Canada perhaps, because Canadians are quite advanced in this field?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, we've got really strong networks with scholars in Canada, especially Western Canada, all across the US. I was off in the US earlier this year. We've got colleagues coming from Canada and the US and Hawaii and New Zealand coming later in the year. So definitely there's a lot of international collaboration with scholars looking at our own perspectives and then kind of coming together and seeing what commonalities we share, how we can work together and push the knowledge forward and push the sharing of this culture forward.
And in terms of our region, is there much learning and collaboration across the sort of Indo-Pacific space, but more closely to home, really, the Pacific region?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Indigenous peoples have had long histories with the Pacific, even predating colonial times. You know, Indigenous peoples have had relationships with peoples from Asia and the Pacific long before Western governments came here. But even now, if we're looking at the ANU and the Bell School, you know, we have a very strong Pacific Affairs Department with many scholars of Pacific heritage and Pacific background who are currently, some of them are currently teaching in the Pacific. And so they're there doing that work. And their work aligns very strongly, you know, the things that they're caring about, sharing of culture, local communities, even micro issues like, or not micro issues, but even issues like climate change, Indigenous people's rights, land rights. Those are issues that communities here are facing and dealing with as well. So there's a lot of collaboration and kind of, cross-pollination between these two areas. And it's really great to be here at the Bell School, you know, seeing that between our Pacific Affairs Department and the IR Department and the kind of work that we do together there.
And your PhD, can you tell us more, what is your PhD on?
Yeah, so I'm looking at issues of Indigenous diplomacy, mainly through my own people, the Wiradjuri people of Western New South Wales, looking at how we understand of diplomatic and political issues and what that looks like for us in terms of framing our involvement with domestic and international politics.
That sounds absolutely fascinating.
God, I hope so, because I've got a few more years left of it. So, yeah, no, it's really interesting work. It's one that, you know, my community definitely has been involved in and is very involved in, and it's really great to be a part of that work. And, of course, I live on country out in central New South Wales and come into Canberra to work, so it's great to be kind of also grounded in that sense of being out in the country and then being able to come in here and do the work that I do.
And in terms of leadership and role modelling to other Indigenous students, what would be your piece of advice to them?
That this discipline is a home for them. I think when I was going through the university, it definitely didn't feel like a place that was for us. But now I think it's become places where Indigenous peoples are welcome, our knowledges are welcome. Not to the extent that they could be, but definitely I think, you know, Indigenous peoples, Indigenous students, politics is a space that we can create change, that we can create change not only in the practical politics of electoral politics, but also in the understanding of politics, understanding of political systems. It's really a discipline where we can make a lot of difference for our peoples and understanding and sharing of our cultures. And so, you know, I love seeing Indigenous students in my classrooms and in our workshops. And of course, for me, if I walked into a room and it was all Indigenous students, I'd be very happy. Unlikely, but that's never going to happen. But of course, that would be the absolute dream for me.
James Blackwell, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much.
The conference ended on a positive and forward-looking note, bringing a multidisciplinary perspective to the question of what kind of international relations is being envisaged for the future. This report shared with us by Nina Markovic from SBS Serbian.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
That song, Freedom by Mau Power, we reached the end of today's program. Thank you very much for your company this Monday afternoon. I'm Bertrand Tungandami. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.